This is Ray Allen filling in for Zach for a little bit of a second here because he's stuck in traffic downtown, but you are listening to Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. Again, this is not Zach Yenser, but we're just going to make it happen until he arrives, and we're trying to figure out what we can talk about. Tom, how you doing out over there?
Oh, so far, so good.
That's good. That's
Let me get my headphones on.
I'll let you do that. That way you can talk to me. We also have Rhonda Pena, who is running for office in for Pima County in District 1. Hi, Rhonda. Are you? Is Rhonda's mic on there, Tom? Are we good to go? Okay, Rhonda, how are you doing?
Hi, good morning. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, you're so welcome. We're glad that you're here. And obviously, we're killing time a tiny bit. I know Zach is like right around the corner.
That's okay.
And you were saying to me a second ago that that traffic for you was bad too.
Yes, it was. I think there was, according to the news, there was a accident on I-10. And so coming from Oral Valley, I had a little jaunt, and I-10 is the best way to come. But what are you going to do? I'm here.
Not much. You made it. Zach will be here shortly, and then he can carry on with whatever he wants to do with his show. But for now, we can talk about you and why you got into the race and what you know. You were in government in Oral Valley, but why did you get into the race to try and go for Pima County?
So, and thank you for asking.
Yeah.
So my background, obviously, I'm a native Tucsonan, second generation native Tucsonan. I've been affiliated with strong ties to District 1 for all my life, and I'm a lifelong Republican. And as even though Oral Valley serving there is a nonpartisan governing body, I feel that my experience and connections to District 1 are very, very good to be able to take this next step to help Pima County in a governing role. So with the banking side, that experience along with governing, I feel like I will add quite a bit of value to the Pima County Board of Supervisors seat for District 1.
Sure, that makes sense. You know, you've got a lot of challengers. The race is kind of up in the air with a lot of people running. What kind of different things do you think that you bring compared to the people that you're running against in the primary?
Thank you. Good question. So I think the contrast for us, once again, it comes back to my local ties here in Pima County, along with my banking experience. I had the opportunity to provide opportunities for business expansion, which is very important to government. I know how to manage budgets, manage financials, and then coupled with the opportunity with governing, you know, having municipal governing experience, I feel that's what's going to help bring that.
Sure. That makes
to
sense.
The next level.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think one of the things that's difficult right now is that, you know, you're moving into this race. You have a lot of challengers that are in the primary. And I think it's interesting because the race is, I'm trying to think of the way to put this, has been a certain way. Wait, Zach's arriving right now.
Hi,
maybe
Zach.
I shouldn't finish my point. Maybe I'll let Zach take over and ask you questions. But what I was going to say is the district is a certain way, so how do you appeal to all those voters in Pima County District 1? You can answer that while Zach's putting these on.
Sure. So how to appeal to all the voters? Number one, you have to know the issues and be able to be a problem solver. And in my career in banking, you're a problem solver, but you do it collaboratively. It's not about different party lines. You have to be able to get results, whether you're working in a business or you're sitting on a governing body, which I currently do now. And in order to do what you're elected to do, and that's get results, you have to be able to work collaboratively. And I think that appeals right now when we look from the national level on down. It's about getting things done for our voters versus, you know, having, you know, a personal agenda or, you know, having an attack mode all the time. I personally believe trying to get results, working collaboratively is what would appeal to voters, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to make an impact on their everyday lives.
With Rhonda Pena in studio today, our candidate interviews continuing with Your Vote, Your Voice, our election coverage locally, state, and nationally here on Tipping Point with me, your host, Zach Yenser. Rhonda Pena serves on the Oro Valley Town Council. Currently, I like to ask candidates this question, Rhonda. I think I've asked every candidate interview this so far, and it's this. And it's kind of funny because it is the show name. But what was your tipping point? You mentioned you serve already in a local municipality. It is in the district. And so you've seen the impact of the Board of Supervisors on your current role. And you've been in business and banking and all of that. What was your tipping point moment where you said, I got to be in this race. I'm the person to take on for the next however many terms?
There's a couple things. Can I have two tipping points?
Sure. Okay. So no candidate has had two tipping points. Well, so okay, I asked you the question
is your first one. So the first tipping point, I believe, is that when you are actually sitting in a local governing seat, you get to know the region with which you're doing the governing. It's not just about your particular municipality, but for me, it was the region. And when I was actually sitting in the seat, I saw, you know what, here is the experience from my career. And now my experience in governing, the tipping point for me is those two connect very, very well to be able to what I perceive is to serve not only District 1, but Pima County as a whole. And because I have had strong connections here all my life, I thought, you know what, this is a very good time for me to be able to step up and put those two together and try to make a difference where I can. And the other tipping point is, we are in a very, very difficult position in Pima County because we have to start working on results and getting things done if we're going to try to move Pima County forward. I firmly believe there are a lot of not only business stakeholders, but I believe citizens that really want to see it move forward. And so the tipping point for me is when you listen and talk to people, it's kind of a perfect storm. So my experience based on the collaboration that I've known and been able to work with people, in addition to what I think people are seeking, is we need to get things done in government. And if that means, you know, working together and trying to find results, then let's get it done. So my intentions, the tipping point for me is, you know, let's get to work day one in District 1.
You were talking about the diversity of the district. Maybe I'll editorialize for a second. You can push back on it, but here's how I see it. And I mean, I don't live in District 1, caveat. I look at it from a, you know, analyst, journalist side of things, but it certainly seems, there was a very strong, I would say, kind of Tea Party, fiscal conservatism movement in that district, starting maybe around 10, 15 years ago. It has sort of maintained. I think it's shifting. I think there's a greater diversity of voters than maybe have been voting in the last two terms. Am I totally off base? And if not, what are you hearing from voters on the ground today? What are the issues that are important to them?
I don't think you're completely off base, Zach. Going back to what I mentioned before, I think what voters want now, they want results. What is the value that I am getting for my government? So I think you could be of any party and ask that question, what am I getting for the value from my government, whether it's to my elected officials, whether it's the taxes I pay, what is the value I'm getting? So I think that applies to all parties. Going to the Tea Party, the more conservative that you're talking about, I think deep down inside, most people align in that they worry fiscally about their well-being. And maybe some more than others, and they have a different idea of how they want to see that happen. So I would say that there are definitely still fiscally, you know, conservative people that are out there. And, you know, coming from my background, I mean, banking, I know how to get the most out of a dollar, and I am very fiscally conservative. So I would say that they are still there, but it's how do we not only maintain our conservative principles, but get to a point where we're getting things done. And so I think that's where a lot of people really align, but maybe have different ideas on how to get there. And so my thought process is we got to try to get things done. And so that we can try to find that balance of having quality, valued service in addition to being fiscally responsible.
I want to carry this over as the segue to our second segment. I want our listeners to also carry over as well for many, many reasons. One of which, though, is I want to clarify the question that I asked you and why I asked it in the way that I did. There are four Republicans running in District 1. I think it's still either tied for or the most competitive race Pima County race. I'll talk about kind of how you might compare and contrast yourself for a Republican, in this case, listener who has four choices here in this primary. Why Rhonda over some of your other companions in sure. in this race? And then we'll talk about issues as well.
Okay,
and there's one issue that I'm excited to get your thoughts on, because you're in a municipality jurisdiction now, mm-hmm. thinking about Pima County down the road. I want to ask you about a certain issue where where the overlap, I think, is really interesting.
Okay.
So much more to go. We're only partway through with Rhonda Pina this morning. She serves on the Oro Valley Town Council and is looking to replace longtime Supervisor Allie Miller on the Pima County Board of Supervisors. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back.
It's that time of year. Everyone hates it. It's tax time. But there's no reason to stress. Shanae and the team at Simply Bookkeeping and Taxes can take care of it all for you and make it simple and easy. For Tipping Point listeners only, Shanae is offering a one-time special offer of 50% off your personal or business tax prep. Call 520-838-0856 and let her know Zach sent you to get started.
25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's 20 new startups at the U of A Center for Innovation, the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, or the Forge at Roy Place, we're looking forward on Tipping Point to celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories of the people and ideas to the University of Arizona driving innovation in our region, moving at the speed of business.
So many of you listening right now are leading a successful and growing business here in Tucson. You know it depends on finding and keeping the right talent. Doing it right can help you stand out and have an edge as a leading employment brand. Wing it, and you might see a great candidate head to a competitor. The Talent Store has helped local Tucson companies like yours win the battle for talent through their recruiting services and consulting. Whether you're looking for a high-level leader, filling a key position, or just want to retain and develop your current team, visit yourtalentstore.com today for a free consultation.
Today's hot real estate market comes with its own challenges. If you're trying to buy a home, you have to move fast or it's gone fast. Selling your home, that's just always a hassle. But it doesn't have to be your experience. My friend Jason Carlton is a real estate consultant servicing the Tucson metro area. His passion is to help families sell and buy homes with expertise, genuine care, and responsiveness. Feel free to call or text him with any real estate needs to get started. 520-310-6761. Tucson, welcome back to Tipping Point. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, and we are continuing with our 2020 election coverage here by sitting down with Rhonda Pina. She's a Republican running in District 1 to replace longtime supervisor on the Board of Supervisors, Allie Miller, who will step down after two terms, as I understand she committed to before she got elected. So November 2020 will be the changeover there. Rhonda Pina, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you, Zach.
I asked you a question that I wanted to double back on, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. This is not my opinion. This is something that I've heard about D1, about the district. I want to know where you line up on it, and that is this, that there has been a record that actually most people appreciate of fiscal conservatism, mm-hmm. of watching the budget,
right.
Of being hawkish on the details, and a lot of people want to see that continue and hope that it will continue, and I think that fiscal conservatism is a good thing. What I've heard on the street is that what they've been missing in D1 is a vision, mm-hmm. that there's been a let's watch the P's and Q's. But where are we going? And what's the big idea? I hear this from Republicans in mm-hmm. District 1. Is that sort of what you were saying before of let's stay conservative and fiscally responsible, but let's also cast a vision of where we're going? Is that one of the reasons you're running?
Yes, that actually is. And if I may, I'd like to state my vision. The course that I would like to see, which is improving trust through supporting greater transparency of budget accountability. We need to prioritize county functions while reducing the bureaucracy and, of course, providing better services through strong growth without raising taxes. So, yes, it's about being fiscally conservative, but at the same time, government's about providing service. And we have to provide service at levels, once again, that our taxpayers feel are of value to them. And so I believe that we do need to watch the expenses, you know, control the expenses, but also look at how are we going to bring in new revenue. And the way that we bring in new revenue is we have to have expansion, right? Business expansion, business growth. And so that comes from, you know, having a vision that, okay, I want to advocate because I've seen how it works in my local municipality in Oral Valley. We don't have a local property tax, nor do I want one. And our citizens don't want one either. So what is it that we need to do while we're watching the expenses and having accountability in our budget, but yet maintaining those quality services? And that's where I believe, coming with my experience, knowing what you can and can't do at certain government levels, but also looking at the business sector, using the private sector knowledge and experience to bring that to the county level. I think having that business acumen and having the advocacy and articulating it would bode well and hopefully get others on board, because we have to have a business-friendly board of supervisors. Not that they're not. I think there's some strides. But how much better can we be? And that's where I think it comes down to, yes, accountability is omni-important, but we also need to look at how are we going to continue to provide the services and improve Pima County, where it can be improved.
Yep. I want to ask you about one issue at the very end. The time always moves so quickly, but I want to give an opportunity because there are four Republicans running in the race. I love your thoughts on this. You've got, you know, a guy in Bill Beard who's chaired the Pima County GOP, has had a lot of infrastructure on the ground. Vic Williams, former state representative. Steve Spain is Allie Miller's choice. You have experience in business. You're on the Oro Valley Town Council. I've actually never said all that in a row before. It's actually really decently strong field of candidates.
That's
goodness.
That's a good summary.
You've found your way into the most competitive race around Pima. But what would you say to the voters to say, this is what I believe sets me apart? This is my differentiating factor, because voters have choices this time around.
Yes, they do. And so my contrast, first of all, is my experience. And I believe having that business experience, that is how we're going to be able to drive revenues. You know, in banking, you understand what the revenues and expenditures, how that relationship works. And then I've also now known how it can be applied to government. And so I have that local experience. I also have the experience in governing. I have a record. I have a record of voting on the things that are important to me, which is the transparency and accountability of government. I did support and pass a policy for taking surplus monies and putting them towards capital improvements. That's good fiscal policy. I also am a very, very big supporter of public safety, and I have definitely passed policies as part of a council that supports public safety. And then the same thing applies to economic development. I've passed policies that support economic development and growth. And then lastly, infrastructure, you know, looking at water policies that make sense. I serve as a council liaison to the water utility. And so I look at infrastructure is being very important. Pima County has road issues. So those voting records speak for themselves as to how I can then be successful and moving up to the next level. So having that understanding. And then also in business, one thing you realize that you have to be collaborative to get things done. One person cannot make things happen on a governing body. It just doesn't happen that way. You have to try to get along and try to find where you can navigate to get some results. And so that's where I feel the contrast is, and where voters can feel, I think voters can feel comfortable knowing that I'm going to have that experience and apply it accordingly.
You mentioned infrastructure, and that will probably be our final question. What I hope is not our first interview. This is our first get to know you and your platform mm-hmm. interview. And as we continue on this process, we'll continue to get nitty gritty on policies, especially the second time around. But one issue that I think you might have an interesting perspective on, I would imagine, is how Pima County is going to be paying for roads for the next 10 years. I think about the bond that was on the ballot ballot to basically provide funds for road repair in all jurisdictions. It failed with the voters. Pima County decided to go with a PAYGO model, which from a fiscal perspective sounds good, but it's for, you know, Pima County unincorporated roads. So you sit on the Oro Valley Town Council. You're not going to see that money in Oro Valley. That's going to be unincorporated. You're running for Pima County Board of Supervisors. When people think about Rhonda Pinion maybe voting for you and going, will she fix the roads and keep them up? How do your two perspectives come into play in solving that if you were to become Board of Supervisors?
Thanks, Zach. That's a good question.
And I only gave you 2.5 minutes to answer.
Okay, so roads. I think PAYGO is a good start. You know why I'm happy about it? Is because they're now prioritizing roads. Roads are a priority now. However, the challenge with a PAYGO, the model that they're currently using, is that 10 years is a long time. So if you're at the end of the 10-year tranche, your roads are not going to get fixed. And as a banker, I understand the cost of monies. And so when you look at the cost of construction year over year over year, we may not get caught up in a 10-year period because the cost is going to continue to increase as we continue to need to fix the roads. So there's an issue there. The other problem is that part of those monies, they're all projected to come out of partially the HERF funds, which is fine. That's dedicated to roads. But the other portion is the surplus in the general fund budget. And that surplus comes from, we've been fortunate because there's been an increase in the appraised values, right? So that money's now,
right,
they go to the general fund. So there's challenges with that, in that it's not going to happen fast enough and the cost is going to continue to increase. There's other tools we might want to take a look at that I think are more equitable to all the users of the roads, which is potentially the reauthorization of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan. I like it for two reasons. It's a public process and it's voter approved. And if they do have some kind of component that adds operating and maintenance, there's the possibility that those funds would help pay for the roads where it wouldn't have to come out of all of the general fund, or a portion of it, or a large portion come out of the general fund budget. Because keep in mind, that 10-year plan is a 10-year projection. So what if things, right, you know, what if things change? And then out of the general fund are there competing needs, which there can be because it's, right, discretionary. So to answer your question, it's a challenge. So that's why my vision of looking at the revenue sides, that's where we're going to be able to help alleviate the taxpayer issue with the current taxpayers.
Rhonda Pinion, thank you so much. So much more we could cover. We'll cover
thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank you for being in studio.
My pleasure.
Good luck out there on the trail.
Yes, thank you. Have a good day.
Tucson will be right back to talk Super Tuesday results. Lots to cover. Tucson, Tipping Point is proud to have Why I Love Where I Live as a sponsor of our program. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Visit their shop filled with locally designed goods and resources to encourage an appreciation and curiosity about what makes Tucson special and unique. Located at the MSA Annex just west of I-10 and Congress, find more details and shop hours at their website, whyiloveWhereILive.com.
When did you lose control? Was it when you became a number and not a person? Or was it when you accepted that this is just the way things are? Truth is, you didn't lose control. You gave it up. Because you have a choice. You can make them too big to fail and fail to belong to something bigger. Or you can put your money where your values lie and make your community too strong to fail. The choice is yours. Or are you going to give that up too? Vantage West. Banks own you. You own us.
Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Zach Yenser, host of Tipping Point. We know that one out of every four persons in Tucson is living in poverty. I'm pleased to be partnering with Impact of Southern Arizona, a nonprofit that works to stabilize families and guide and support them on pathways out of poverty. Celebrating their 20th anniversary, they've invested $22 million into the community and are just getting started. Head to impactsoaz.org for more information and to explore how you can get a credit on your state taxes this year by supporting them. As always, talk to your tax professional. Today's hot real estate market comes with its own challenges. If you're trying to buy a home, you have to move fast or it's gone fast. Selling your home, that's just always a hassle. but it doesn't have to be your experience. My friend Jason Carlton is a real estate consultant servicing the Tucson metro area. His passion is to help families sell and buy homes with expertise, genuine care, and responsiveness. Feel free to call or text him with any real estate needs to get started. 520-310-6761.
All right. Well, we were talking about traffic and the situation that caused a delay for Zach getting in this morning, Zachary. And yes. I've just been told there's an accident at Tancredi and Sabino.
Okay.
And apparently that intersection has been closed because of this accident. Tancredi and Sabino, if you can avoid that area.
Good to know.
Try to find another way around that intersection.
Tom, should I also give my my traffic tip as well to our listeners?
Oh, please. I think we need it with what's going on. I mean, listen, we were just talking a minute ago off the air about the construction of Ruth Roth's interchange with I-10, diverting a lot of people to other interchanges to get onto I-10, which is causing slowing access. In addition to the number of people that are over here from Southern California,
right?
Witness all of the California plates we're seeing these days.
Right.
So, please, do you have a tip?
I do. I just want to give our amazing listeners a little tip that if you are getting somewhere, either downtown or through downtown, give yourself a few extra minutes. I have not seen traffic that bad downtown since the AC Marriott was going up, and they crunched it down to one lane going eastbound. I have not seen traffic like that. And what they've done is they've actually started, once you get past 6th downtown, they started to crunch it down to one lane as you get down to Aviation Parkway. And so I found out at the very end why I was sitting in traffic so long downtown. So give yourself a few 5 or 10 extra minutes if you can. If you're heading to the east side through downtown, you're heading somewhere downtown, they've got that crunch down. And that's my pro tip.
Well, what a topic of discussion this would be. Could we use that crosstown east-west freeway now?
We could. Oh, we could. Yeah, and what's funny, Tom, and John knows this, is that usually when I have those rare moments, and it happens rarely, thankfully, when I am just, you know, under the wire to get in, I'm always with a transportation-related guest. It's always with the Department of Transportation director. I'm talking to the e-scooter person or something. And this time it was Rhonda Pena, who was very gracious. But that's traffic. But anyway, we're not going to take over Ed Alexander's job anytime soon, are we, Tom?
No, we
can bemoan our problems. We're not very good at
fitting
traffic.
This report of the accident at Tancredi and Sabino was handed to me by none other than Mr. Alexander,
looking out for you, Tucson, all the time. Well, I figured I'd come in today and talk about Super Tuesday results, but this feels like a real-time unfolding thing because right as I walked in, and I'm getting ahead of myself here, Michael Bloomberg just dropped out of the race, and you know, I'll get into details in case anyone was blissfully, and I say that genuinely, blissfully unaware. I watch way too much news coverage on this stuff to get ready for these things. So if you weren't watching, more power to you. But Joe Biden had a comeback that we have rarely seen in national politics. I mean, 72 hours ago, his campaign was left for dead. He won over the weekend in South Carolina dramatically, driven by the African-American vote. And that set off a Tom Steyer dropout. That set off a Pete Buttigieg dropout and endorsement of Biden. That set off an Amy Klobuchar drop-off and endorsement of Biden in Minnesota. That set off a Beto O'Rourke endorsement. That set off some congressional endorsements. And, I mean, there's no other way to say it. Last night, Joe Biden went from zero to hero in a 72-hour time period. Now, I think Bernie Sanders still has a real shot at the nomination, right? Some people would say, well, you know, Zach, you're just jumping on the bandwagon about Biden. I think it's still a very tight race. But to see a candidate that was going from fourth and fifth place in the first four states to now winning what I think could be 10 of the 14 states yesterday, a surprise victory in the big state of Texas. The race has changed from where we were when I started projecting stuff on Friday.
Not only that, Zachary, but in the face of the coronavirus,
yeah,
the Dow Jones Industrials are up over 500 points today to 26,430. And this all begs a question in my mind. Is it so much that Joe Biden is showing life? Or is it more related to the fact that people are breathing a sigh of relief that it looks like Bernie Sanders is not going to make it?
You know,
what do you think?
Man, that's a good question. Because before any of this happened, the Dow Jones had been up, 700 points. So it dropped 1,100 points.
Well, then, but it dropped yesterday.
Did it drop yesterday?
Yeah, it was up. It was up Monday, and then it dropped yesterday, and then kind of evened out yesterday.
Yeah.
Losses weren't so bad, but now today, after Super Tuesday last night, the Dow is showing a gain of over 500 points at this time.
You know, without having come in, looked at that, I mean, my guess would be to some extent, and this is what, you know, some of the pundits were starting to say yesterday, is it the
Biden looking good effect or the Sanders looking bad effect?
Right. So my guess would be, and this is not political, I want all my listeners to know this, I think just from an analysis standpoint, and with what I'm going to say next, I think it's more about Bernie Sanders, to be honest. I think so too. I think what we've seen, right, is a Democratic voter base that up until last night really didn't know where it was going to go. Really was concerned about who's the guy that's going to beat Donald Trump. If you're a Democrat, that's the all-important question. Again, this is not a political statement. The exit polls from the Super Tuesday states said that the thing that most people cared about is who is the guy that can take down Donald Trump. That's all Democratic voters are focused on. And there will be Warren voters and Steyer voters and Buttigieg voters, voters that are not aligned with Joe Biden on a lot of stuff, who will say, you know what, I'm gonna just grimace. And I'm gonna vote for the guy because I like him better than I like Donald Trump. And I think what we saw in the last 72 hours was large parts of the base start to consolidate around Joe Biden and give Democrats confidence that he could be their guy. And you know, what's interesting, Tom, and we'll see how this shakes out, is that Joe Biden is winning with African-American voters. I mean, it's not even close. I mean, we're talking 60-70% and older white voters. Bernie Sanders is getting Latino voters and younger voters. I mean, it is polar opposites in terms of the percentages these guys are getting with that demographic.
And would you say that the voters so far for Biden, the groups that you mentioned, are more like traditional Democrats?
Yes.
They've always voted Democrat, and so they're going to go that way?
That's my thing. And I would also say this, Tom. I would say that I think the Latino voter base is really strong. I think it powers and will continue to power Bernie Sanders. He's got the Latino vote. He's put in the work. He's an authentic guy.
And he's got the millennial vote.
And he means what he says. But again, I'm just going to analyze, right? This is my analyst hat, friends. If I had to pick, do I want the African-American vote and the older vote, or do I want the younger vote?
Well, if I'm a Democrat, I want the more traditional Democrats to vote for me.
Older voters vote at a higher rate. African-American voters are some of the most pragmatic voters you will ever meet. They turn out. I think Latinos are going to keep voting, turning out. I think Bernie's got that base. It's going to be a real force of nature. Don't count on younger voters.
No,
younger voters
not the,
are the worst.
The millennials.
The worst.
If they can't vote for Sanders, I don't think they're going to vote for Biden. They just won't vote.
Younger voters will not. Tom, you're nailing it.
Yeah. So
Bernie Sanders got, I think, between 60-70% of the young vote, except the young vote is 16%, even in some states, of the voter population. So
Yeah, even if he got all of them, that wouldn't help, wouldn't get him over the hump.
But Biden's at 5%. I mean,
with the young voters, which won't hurt.
Young voters are not voting for Bernie Sanders, but for Biden. But the thing is that Joe Biden is saying, I can get the younger voters to vote for me. I can get disaffected Democrats. I think he's wrong.
I do too, but it won't hurt. It won't matter.
Pragmatically, I think you're mostly right. I think you're mostly right. And I think the other thing that Joe Biden can do that Bernie Sanders can't is get disaffected Republicans who want a centrist alternative to Trump. They're out there. I don't think there's tons of them, but they're out there. They're going to vote for Biden. They're not going to vote for Bernie.
He's more of a, to them, I think Biden is more of a traditional candidate, a traditional type of candidate.
It's interesting. I think you're right. I think you're right a lot of this entire segment. I'm trying to get into the heads of the American voter. And I think for those who are disaffected with Trump, they're not looking for a new movement. They're looking for a return to the status quo. No one's looking at Joe Biden and going, he's the change agent we need for a great American future. He can say that all he wants. He is a status quo establishment Democratic candidate.
He would be, to me, more like a Jimmy Carter type.
Yeah. Yeah, in the sense of I heard a reporter say this, like a 4-year moral rinse, right? And this is coming from
someone who's
not, you know, a fan of Trump. You know where it's coming from. But like Jimmy Carter was not a great president. He was a moral rinse, right? He was a good, clean guy, Sunday school teacher, came in, was a little peace between everything, and it felt better as we headed into Reagan, right? And so some people saw Buttigieg like that. I think Joe Biden is like that, to be honest. No disrespect to the guy, but he is a return of the status quo. But there are a lot of voters in America that would rather have a return of the status quo when they can wake up in the morning.
They might be a little tired of... Right. Radical or near radical change.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I know a lot of Republicans, Tom, who are fans of Trump's policies, who are tired of waking up, you know,
like the tweets so much.
You know, exactly. You know,
his personality.
Who could do without the blood pressure always being up?
Yeah.
You know, right? For 4 years, the American blood pressure has just been up constantly. And I think there's a lot of people. By the way, 790-2040 is the number you can call to agree or disagree with any of this. There's a lot of people who go, if you lined up 10 of Trump's policies and if you're a Republican, there's a lot of Republicans who like probably 7 to 9 of them, to be honest, but would rather wake up not to 10 tweets and not to 25/7 news coverage. That's part of the news problem of just constantly like blood pressure rising stuff.
The one thing I've liked about the Trump presidency is it just to give you a visualization. Say you had a pot of soup that's been sitting on the stove, barely simmering, and you know how they'll kind of skin over because they've been there so long and nothing's been happening, and he has stirred that pot up. I kind of like that. They've kind of stirred things up in Washington.
He has stirred the pot. And you know what, Tom? The media makes us think, again, this is just an analyst. I watch a lot of stuff, and I hear from a lot of different people. We think that there's a certain type of person who wanted a Trump presidency. Right now, I'll just leave it there. We can go into race, background, culture, blah, blah, blah. The diversity of people around this country over the last 4 years who have come out and said, right, African-Americans, Latinos, people, again, that the media says, you know, want XYZ as opposed to others who want XYZ, have come out the last 4 years and go, I got to tell you a secret. I voted for Trump, not because I was a fan, but I wanted someone to stir the pot.
Yeah.
And I don't think the media gets it yet. And again, this is not a partisan statement. This is just objectivity. I don't think the media's caught up to the groundswell of people who are in support of Donald Trump.
And my impression of the media in general is that they have never accepted Trump as being president. They don't, for whatever reason, regard him as the president. They're just sort of waiting it out, you know, until we can get a change.
Right.
But the one thing I recall when I was thinking about the Obama presidency that I didn't particularly like was this notion of, well, the way things are now under Obama, this is the new normal. You're going to have to get used to it, America. This is the new normal. And I was thinking to myself, I don't want to accept that. We don't have to accept the new normal that jobs are going out of the United States overseas or to Mexico or wherever. And all of our manufacturing is going to China, which has turned out to be a big mistake as far as I'm concerned. Oh, you know, we have a lot of stuff that's made and manufactured in China, and we have supply chains of stuff, material that comes from China for people here to use in their manufacturing. And, you know, I don't like that. We're relying too much on a country that doesn't really like us that much, who would just as soon see us go away and they'll deal with the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Tom, you are the king of segues, because there's another challenge with so much of this stuff coming from China, is coronavirus.
Yeah.
Which is
something that we can talk about after the break.
Let's do it.
All right.
Yeah, I'm getting the eyes from Tom. It's time to go to our last break of the hour. Give us a call, 790-2040. We'll wrap up this and talk coronavirus when we come back. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser here on 1030 The Voice. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's 20 new startups at the U of A Center for Innovation, the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, or the Forge at Roy Place, we're looking forward on Tipping Point to celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories of the people and ideas to the University of Arizona driving innovation in our region, moving at the speed of business.
When did you lose control? Was it when you became a number and not a person? Or was it when you accepted that this is just the way things are? Truth is, you didn't lose control. You gave it up. Because you have a choice. You can make them too big to fail and fail to belong to something bigger. Or you can put your money where your values lie and make your community too strong to fail. The choice is yours. Or are you going to give that up too? Vantage West. Banks own you. You own us.
Federally insured by NCUA.
So many of you listening right now are leading a successful and growing business here in Tucson. You know it depends on finding and keeping the right talent. Doing it right can help you stand out and have an edge as a leading employment brand. Wing it, and you might see a great candidate head to a competitor. The Talent Store has helped local Tucson companies like yours win the battle for talent through their recruiting services and consulting. Whether you're looking for a high-level leader, filling a key position, or just want to retain and develop your current team, visit yourtalentstore.com today for a free consultation. It's that time of year. Everyone hates it. It's tax time. But there's no reason to stress. Shanae and the team at Simply Bookkeeping and Taxes can take care of it all for you and make it simple and easy. For Tipping Point listeners only, Shanae is offering a one-time special offer of 50% off your personal or business tax prep. Call 520-838-0856 and let her know Zach sent you to get started.
Tucson, welcome back to a rapidly moving hour. They always go really fast. Thanks for joining us. 790-2040 is your live line to give us a call. Join the conversation. We just debriefed Super Tuesday and barely scratched the surface. I said last Friday, I said, hey, I think Joe Biden's going to win South Carolina. I think by the time I get on Monday, the race may very well change. I'm often wrong on these things, but I think that nailed it. And yeah, the race has completely changed.
Before, he came away with what, about eight of the states that they were competing for?
Nine officially.
Nine?
I still think he could pick up Maine, which would give him 10.
Well, that would be a slap in the face to Bernie Sanders.
Well, they're both New Englanders, so I mean it's a fight.
Yeah.
It's a fight. Before we jump back in, and I just feel like if I don't mention this, that we'll get to the end. I'll go, oh no, I didn't mention it. I want to mention it. The Talent Store, founded by my friend Devin Underwood, is our sponsor for this segment. She helps local companies like yours win the battle for talent through their recruiting services and talent strategy consulting. So whether you're looking to bring on a high-level leader or fill a key position or retain your current teams, the battle for talent is on. in Tucson, especially as larger firms come into our market. A lot of the small and mid-sized businesses that listen to this show need a talent professional to guide through the process of becoming and being a leading employment brand. Visit yourtalentstore.com and schedule a free consultation today. A couple of things that came in just to wrap up our Super Tuesday conversation. I had a listener message in during the break, Tom, and he said a lot of people just find Joe likable. He seems genuinely good. People may be craving that, and it kind of gets back to some of the things that we were talking about, kind of maybe that moral rinse or the feeling of it, if you will, that I've heard out there. Not my words, just what I've heard out there. The other thing we didn't touch on, and we just got to put it out there and look at it later, is that Mayor Bloomberg, even though it didn't translate to his personal success, has built a heck of a ground team. The staff he has on the ground, the campaign headquarters he has on the ground, the machine, and I mean that not in the bad sense, the machine he has built on the ground with his $500 million is not going to get him to the presidency. But he just threw his weight behind Joe Biden. And you better believe that that is an asset in Joe Biden's pocket. So Mike Bloomberg, what he did is like when Andrew Yang dropped out, he went and he hired Andrew Yang's guys, right? Gave them 150% pay increase and said, I'm going to hire you through November. The guy hired staff on a contract term through November. Whether he got the nomination or not, his plan has been to help the moderate wing of the party beat Bernie Sanders. Full stop. Period.
So you're thinking that Bloomberg is not only going to give Joe vocal support, but financial support as well.
He already endorsed Joe Biden this morning. He dropped out and endorsed Joe Biden right before we started talking about it. And I think he's going to position his existing resources. He's going to turn those into Joe Biden headquarters. So
interesting.
That is interesting. Can you believe in 72 hours how many candidates have dropped out, the majority of whom have centered around Joe Biden?
Are you surprised that Elizabeth Warren is still in it?
I'm actually going to check my phone by the time I get out of the studio. She may drop out. There's no path for her. Zero. Unless she's in it to mess up Bernie's chances, which I've heard some of that too this morning. There's no point. She couldn't even get her home state. I mean, the wheels have just come off that campaign in a way that I couldn't have predicted. I would not have predicted a week ago.
And I don't think she has very deep pockets financially to keep this campaign going. Do you?
She does. So that's,
she does?
That's the thing. She just really funneled a ton of money the last month or so into a super PAC, which she said that she wouldn't do. She's had two debate performances where actually I think she killed Bloomberg's chances. She just took him to the woodshed in two straight debates.
Oh, yeah, the stuff that's been vetted about his past and remarks, things that he's said and done.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't good for him.
It was not good. He did not show up. She actually raised a lot of money off those debates. She's got money in the bank. She could be in it the whole way.
So her contributions are what's keeping her going, I guess. She doesn't have it personally, right? Like Bloomberg.
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, she's one of the millionaires in the race, but she doesn't have the personal wealth to keep going. She's got the backing to keep going, but she's not performing she's yet to win a state. Which is amazing. And I was going to get to coronavirus. I'll do it tomorrow. It's not going to happen today, Tom. I've got a lot of good stuff about it, especially the White House response. I'll get to that. It resonated what Chris Christie said a few nights ago. I think it was on Stephen Colbert, where he said, look, you know, Elizabeth Warren was a Bernie progressive until she wasn't. Right. A few months ago, she made some strategic moves to separate herself from Bernie. Right. So Bernie supporters or people who are on the progressive wing of the party.
We're talking about the political wins.
Are saying, well, she's not a true progressive. And then the moderates are going, well, she's not a true moderate. So she's kind of stuck in no woman's land, in no man's land.
Political limbo.
Political limbo. And you see it in the results. I mean, it's game over. She knows it. Everybody knows it. We'll see how long she stays in and why she stays in. But I expect her to drop out this week. I honestly do. That takes us to the end of
what's on tap for tomorrow?
On tap for tomorrow, I got FC Tucson coming in, our local soccer league. They're launching this season, and we're going to talk about coronavirus as well. So strong end to the week here, Tucson. 9 o'clock every morning here on 1030 The Voice. This is Zach Yenser with Tipping Point, in-depth news and discussion about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future, and weekly election 2020 coverage to keep you up to date. Hugh Hewitt coming up, Bill Buckmaster at noon. I'll see you tomorrow.